Let's call this Thursday, December 8th meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Ms. Spear, would you please take the roll?
Chairman Noe.
Here.
Chair Randall. Chairman Bulova.
Here.
Board Member Fassett.
Here.
Mayor Silverberg. Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Stombrice.
Here.
Councilmember Duncan.
Here.
Mayor-elect Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Black.
Here.
Delegate Hugo. Delegate Minshew.
Here.
Ms. Hines.
Here.
Mr. Culp.
Here.
Mayor Foreman.
Here.
Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Ms. Minshew.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
And Ms. Silverberg is here.
I am.
Okay, excellent. First item of business is the minutes of the November 10th meeting. These are sent out in advance. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Parrish, seconded by...
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Excellent. I'm going to depart from the agenda just momentarily. We have a guest, but not an unfamiliar one with us. There he is. We have with us a returning member visiting with us this evening, Adam Evan, who drove here all the way from the beautiful megalopolis of Richmond, Virginia, to get here for us. And you'll recognize this, but we have a little gift. Which one? Here we go. So I want to thank you, Senator Evans, for your extremely helpful service over the years. I think about a number of legislative issues and issues within this room that your ability to help us let some air out of the tires and get the truck through the tunnel is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks for autographs.
You
want to
say something?
Oh, yeah, I'll say a short speech.
Speech.
Thank you.
Politician of the audience, come on.
Thank you. Enjoyed serving here with you, and wish you all good luck, and Randy will tell me everything that happened, and Dick will during the session. So, thanks. I will read your website for all your minutes.
Excellent. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Items 4 through 7, the four items on the consent agenda, I would like to pull item 6. Are there any other items that need to be pulled for questions?
Second.
First, a motion from Senator Black, who is the second on that.
Second.
Second from Ms. Hines. Approval on items 4, 5, and 7. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes unanimously. Item 6 is the standard project agreement with the town of Leesburg for the Route 7 East Market Street / Battlefield Parkway interchange. And just let folks know why I'm pulling this. This interchange project includes, in the original project description, I think in the overall plans, there are two signalized intersections adjacent to the current intersection that are called to be removed as part of the interchange project that's to be built. There had been some discussion about designing the road in such a manner that one of the signalized intersections would remain as a signalized intersection, which would probably reduce its effectiveness, but would also be inconsistent with the project that we approved. In response to that, Mayor David Butler and all of the sitting members of the Leesburg Council have signed a letter confirming their commitment, and Mr. Martinez is here, tell me if I'm wrong on this, confirming their commitment that one way or the other they will remove the traffic signal. Probably no one, if you weren't involved in this, you didn't know about it, but I just want to make this letter part of the record of adoption of this resolution in case the question comes up again. And with that, Mr. Minshew, you make a motion.
Would you like a motion to include that
Please.
Letter into the record? Mr. Chairman, I would move that the letter that the chairman has just advised the authority about be included in the official record of approval of our standard project agreement. And with that inclusion being made, I would move for approval of item number 6, approval of standard project agreement, Town Leesburg, regional funding, Route 7, Battlefield Parkway.
And I'll second that.
Second, Senator Black. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I should ask, are there any questions on that? All right, now, I'll clear the ayes. All right, any opposed? All right, thank you very much. Okay, action items. First up, approval. Oh, wait a minute. No, we have 8. We want to go past 8, right?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to jump past 8 and go to item number 9, the approval of the transaction update contract amendment number 1. Mr. Parrish.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me go through this in just a little bit of detail. As we all know, transaction is important to us because nothing can move forward without it.
But also, nothing can move forward without an evaluation under House Bill 599 as well. And House Bill 599 requires that VDOT, in ongoing coordination with the Commonwealth Transportation Board, as well as DRPT and the MBTA, rate at least 25 projects. And the contract amendment incorporates House Bill 599 process into the transaction update contract. The key to that action is just that it includes that in that process. Cost of the contract is something just under half a billion dollars in order to accomplish that. And the funding we'll take up in the next item. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority approve the attached transaction update contract amendment number one.
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Bulova. Any questions, discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. Item 10 is the approval of acceptance of funds from the Commonwealth to incorporate HB 599 evaluation into the transaction.
The item that we just took up, of course, costs some money, something like $485,000. Something like that. At any rate, the current cost estimate is that, and the funding agreement with the Commonwealth allows it to go to as much as $600,000 in order to get to House Bill 599 effectiveness into the transaction update. And, of course, I'd make the motion that we accept the money up to $600,000 from Virginia in order to move that forward. I move the authority approval of the acceptance of up to $600,000 from the Commonwealth for the purpose of incorporating House Bill 599 project evaluation process into the current transaction update.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Rischel. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That was easy. So we had to do those to make item 8 relevant. That's why I moved it around. This is the approval of the performance measures for the transaction update, and hopefully it'll go as smoothly, but will not go as quickly as the other two. So, Ms. Backman, you want to start us off with this?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, we are at that time where we are seeking an approval of the performance measures as part of the transaction update. These measures have been vetted with your technical advisory committee, your planning coordination advisory committee, the planning and programming committee. We've had various public involvement opportunities to get input from the public on these performance measures. And now I'll have Mr. Keith Jasper, who is the project manager for transaction, to speak to the measures that we're seeking approval on this evening.
Thank you. Chairman Knight, members of the authority, there are 15 measures in the packet for approval tonight. These measures support the objectives of transaction, which in turn support the goals and the vision which were approved by the authority in December of last year. As Backman mentioned, the public engagement, if I could very quickly refer you to slide 20 of the presentation that's attached to this item. This is a very succinct summary of what we heard from the public through multiple forms of public engagement during the fall. And really, there are no surprises here, but it's really nice to be able to see that we have some substantial data here that backs up what forms the recommendation in front of you this evening, with very high priority attached to reducing delays during commute hours and increasing travel time reliability throughout the day, coming to the top of pretty much every form of public engagement that we undertook. So I'm happy to answer any questions on any of these measures, but essentially the Planning and Programming Committee met earlier this week. They heard what the other committees had recommended. For the most part, the committees were in agreement on the majority of the measures. They were not in agreement on somewhat less than half of the measures. To address those disagreements, as it were, or lack of agreement, MBTA staff developed some recommendations, presented them and justifications to the Planning and Programming Committee. which in turn, with one small modification, recommended the package of measures that you had in front of you this evening.
Questions on this? Fantastic. Move by Mr. Seck.
Second
by Ms. Bullivant. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Much shorter discussion than we had at the PBC. Which means we did a great job at the PBC meeting, right? Yeah, that's okay. All right, fantastic. Okay. Next item is the adoption of the 2017 legislative agenda.
Thank you, Chairman Noe. We had this on the agenda last time. We had a good conversation about it. We have made a few adjustments, and I'll let staff sort of draw your attention to those.
I think from last, your November meeting, the adjustment was made because there was a question, I think, raised by Senator Black regarding the proper language,
right.
And we did add a sentence, and I'll ask Ms. Boehner to go over that, to try to strengthen the proper language position.
Sure. Excuse me. So go to top of page 4 under land use planning. Linda had a sentence that really spoke towards what you all talked about, which is having the landowner developer, you know, being able to be a partner in advancing the transportation and projects. So if you come down the sentence starting, while the authority is appreciative of efforts through the end, as you read that, again, it goes back to us wanting to,
second paragraph.
Member jurisdictions and their landowner partners should have sufficient flexibility to explore all options to provide critical transportation facilities. And that was, again, to capture everyone's thinking that one of the reasons we want to hopefully address the proper bill in the future is to get back to having as much flexibility for local government to work with your landowners to provide critical transportation facilities.
And that was the only change from the draft that was distributed for your review at your November meeting.
So with that, I would move that we approve our legislative program.
Is there a second? Second from Ms. Bullivant. Any discussion? Questions? Excellent. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Mr. Chairman, would you note my abstention on that because we'll be down in Richmond probably better that when we see the bill actually come forward, if it does, it's probably just, you know, more appropriate if you know my attention to record.
And I, the same goes for me. I would appreciate if I could be listed as an abstention.
So we'll record that as unanimous vote with Senators Black and Minshew abstaining. And let's acknowledge for the record that Senator Delegate Hugo wasn't here as well, just in case the question comes up. Wasn't present to abstain, but they're kind of the same thing. yeah, okay. Thank you very much. We need to vote on that?
We just did.
Yeah.
Okay, good enough. We voted for abstain first. Okay. Item 12 is the approval of the project endorsements for the fast lane grants. Ms. Backe.
Mr. Chairman, Prince William and Fairfax counties are seeking MBTA endorsements of their fast lane grants. As you know, the USDOT had their initial round of fast lane opportunities, which was earlier this year, I believe. Now they've announced their second call. They're looking at a second call for up to $850 million in fast lane grants. The FAST Act authorized the program at $4.5 billion for fiscal years 2016 through 2020, which includes $850 million for FY 2017 to be awarded by the Secretary of Transportation. And we did solicit through the Regional Jurisdiction and Agency Coordinating Committee if any localities and agencies were seeking endorsements for the authority to please let us know. I do want to note that you did endorse projects on the previous round for the Fast Lane grant, so this isn't precedent setting, and the two localities that contacted us about submissions or endorsement for submissions were Prince William and Fairfax counties.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
So Fairfax County asked for support on our Route 28 Viking, Prince William County, for the U.S. Route 15 improvement with railroad overpass process. per project, and so I would be very happy to move.
Oh, you know what? You should let you should let a jurisdiction that's not part of it make the motion.
I'd be happy to make the motion. So we have a motion from Mr. Fassett. A second from everybody.
It just doesn't look right.
To be fair, Mr. Fassett, while you've made the motion and Mr. Parrish has seconded it, I would note that if we said that Fairfax, then Ms. Bulova should not make the motion on items in which her jurisdiction is chimed in, she would never get to say anything.
That's true.
Fair enough. Mr. Bashotti, Ms. Dominguez, and company do a great job of writing comments.
So that's for sure.
Nothing else.
Why don't we let the record show that Mr. Fazette Arlington moved approval and that it was multiply seconded by. So
we have a motion from Ms. Bulova to acknowledge that Mr. Fazette. Motion from Mr. Fassett, seconded by Mr. Parrish. All in favor, please say aye. Any discussion or any opposed?
Sure.
Mr. Cole, yes.
Could we just note in there that I just like to abstain on that? I have a potential business conflict on that.
Were there any opposed? Unanimous vote with Mr. Cole in abstention. Thank you very much. We have the appointment of the chair and vice chair for 2017. I will go to the nominating committee.
Let me indicate that Ms. Bulova, the other member of the nominating committee, and I met and we caucused, and we'd like to make the recommendation to the MBTA that the future chair be Mr. Noe and vice chair Phyllis Randall.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Please let the record know that I abstain.
Got more work to do, Mr. Noe.
Yes, yeah. I will just know, I noticed Ms. Randall isn't here, and I think back to several years ago when I was elected vice chairman. I was at the meeting, but I missed the vote when I was elected vice chairman. So it's actually a tradition. Yeah.
That's why we have such robust turnout.
Okay, those are action items. Some reports, Finance Committee report, Mr. Parrish.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is call on Mr. Longy to make this report for a couple of reasons. Number one, let me just say this about the committee. The committee is a hardworking committee. I very much appreciate everyone on the committee. They do work and come to the meetings and are involved greatly. So each of you, I want to thank you for that. As a reminder, we have a meeting next week on the 15th of December. There is some question about, and I hope Mr. Longy will help me with this, there's a question about whether we'd like to move the January meeting, and we'll talk about that further. But let me also say that I'm very appreciative of staff. We've got one of the finest staffs that I've seen, and I thank all of them for the work that they do. And there's a couple of pretty good wins in this report, and I'd like the staff to take credit for those wins. Mr. Long.
Thank you, Mayor Parrish. The report details the action items that were approved tonight by the authority related to the transaction update and the receipt of funding from the Commonwealth. As an ongoing discussion in the discussion item of the report, the committee is actively engaged in the budget guidance for fiscal 18. They will be receiving another report responsive to the questions they asked last month next week. In item B, acquisition of investment, safekeeping, and custody services, this is where the wins are. The authority, with the participation of the investment professionals from Fairfax County and Loudoun County, issued an RFP for investment, safekeeping, and custody services. Staff from Arlington County and Prince William County also assisted in the process but did not sit on the selection panel. We were able to achieve a cost reduction based on the proposals originally received of over $100,000. And I think the jurisdictions that participated are going back and looking at their custody agreements. I think it was a two-way learning experience of what has changed in the marketplace. Additionally, I want to note that the interest earnings for fiscal 17 were originally budgeted at $1.9 million. The authority approved the hiring of an investment and debt manager with the 18 budget, and with that, we had committed that investment earnings would increase to $3.5 million. Now that that individual has been hired and we've had some experience with the program, we're actually taking that revenue estimate up to $4.5 million. And we anticipate that with the authority's approval of the investment and safekeeping services, which will be working its way through the agendas to you, that that will go even higher in fiscal 18. And with that, that concludes my summary.
Pretty good wins.
Thank you.
Way to go.
Any questions on finance report? Planning and Program Committee report. Our report is the acted items we took earlier this evening regarding transaction. We've already taken action on that. Planning Coordinating Advisory Committee report, Mr. Foreman.
I got to tell you thank you for letting me serve as the chair the last 2 years, although I don't think I had a choice last year when you called and said I'm it, so I had it.
You made the mistake that Ms. Randall just made, Mr. Meade.
I was there. You called me, go. But I will tell you, and I'll make it short. Mr. Jarvis reported earlier that what the transaction is doing and the scoring. We have been a part of the process, and I've got to thank you all for letting us be a part of the process. As you know, we stood up in the past 18 months. We were wondering when we were going to bite into it, and when we got a piece of the pie, everyone showed up. Excellent meetings, and I've got to thank Mr. Jarvis. I'm not going to thank Ms. Backman because she's a Cubs fan. I will thank her later. But the work that we did really paid off, and I've got to thank all your jurisdictions for helping. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't think Mr. Boyce is here tonight. Do we have anything from the Technical Advisory Committee?
Their report is in.
Ms. Longy, revenue and operating reports?
I don't have anything to add to the reports.
Yes. Ms. Backman?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to note that the Commonwealth Transportation Board will host a public meeting at the Nova District Office on Wednesday, December 14th, so that they can receive public comments for this round of the Smart Scale process. Also, there will be an official, and I guess the town hall, I should say, on the Smart Scale, then there will be an official public hearing for the Atlantic Gateway project immediately following the town hall.
Any questions from Ms. Backman? Chairman's comments. I just have a couple of items. First of all, thank you, everyone, for asking me to serve another year as the chairman of the authority. This is a... I often talk about the fact that I have three full-time jobs. This is the one that pays the least, but it's pretty close between all three of them. But I appreciate the trust that you've placed in me, and I hope it continues to be well-deserved. It's something... I say this as a thank you, but I also say thank you for asking me to serve again, but really thank you for creating an environment in which I'd be willing to. I've had some opportunities in the last few months to talk a great deal about the fact that I've been an elected official for 15 years, which isn't quite as long as everyone in the room, but is not insignificant. The work we've been doing on the authority for the last few years, I believe, is the best work that I have been part of in any team in the public or private sector I've ever been part of. I'm not going anywhere, but when the day comes that I do, this will always be at the top of my resume. And that is only that is not true because of the work I do. That is the work that is true because this authority truly proves that we have the ability to work as a region, which is something that most places in the country don't know how to do, don't do well. And we have not only shown that it can be done, we can show it can be done extremely well. And I think we've become an example. And that is a testament to everyone at this table and the many other people who at one time I took the time to write down all the names of and I lost the paper, should have done on the computer, who have been here before.
We have a tablet.
I know you do. But I try to do it from memory once. So thank you very much for that. I have a question actually for staff some of these I just don't know the answer to. I remember normally in December we would have to give like a directive and then take action in January. Does this body, the authority, is the body that votes to appoint the town representative to the authority, correct?
I believe the bylaw says the chairman of the authority.
That's the question. I think maybe it says the chairman, we've taken a vote. The point being, what we've traditionally done is asked the mayors, the committee of mayors to make a recommendation to us, and we've adopted that. But
correct. Last year we started that. That was the first year we said, mayors, pick yourself, come on up. Because
okay.
A couple years I said, shouldn't we pick our own?
Yeah, that's right. And what so, used to be was that the representatives from Fairfax, Prince William, and Loudoun would talk about it, and then we'd just call our mayors and say, who do you want it to be?
Correct.
But you're right. We've started saying that you – so I guess
– I took action, sir, if you don't mind.
Oh, perfect.
I took action already.
Perfect.
And what we're doing is I will do an email. I will put you on it.
Okay.
And I'm going to go to the mayors and say, let's have a discussion, and we need to make sure we have someone nominated and presented for the January meeting.
So I don't have my glasses on, but I see Ms. Poser mouthing something to me, and I bet it's that be careful about violating the Virginia Open Meeting Laws in that email. Is that it?
That's true, too.
Well, that's what we will do it openly.
Okay.
We will do it openly, but I have to tell them to get ready to talk about it.
So I'm moving my glasses on. You can mouth it again, Ms. Poser.
By the authority.
Okay. By the authority. Okay. So please let me know. Please, actually, more importantly, let Ms. Backman know before the next meeting so
yes,
we can put that on
or
the
yes,
agenda.
Yes, sir. We'll definitely get that going.
That's great. And then... this committee no longer appoints the chairman of the JAC. Is that correct? You don't have a JAC. We have our JAC now.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's not a committee. That's
the one. Does this body... So I just want to make sure these are administrative things we want to get done next month. Between now and next month, let's figure out, are there? Do we have to fill any seats on the TAC? And I know the localities pick the members of the PCAC. We pick the members of the TAC, but they have terms.
You pick six of the nine members of the technical
advisory committee. Oh, sorry. So for Mayor Strong, it's probably for everybody. I know, I'm using acronyms. The technical advisory committee is one of our statutorily required committees, of which there are nine members, six appointed by the authority, three appointed by either the secretary or
the
governor.
Secretary.
Appointed by the secretary. They serve for a certain term. Frankly, it's generally the question is not who do we pick, more is who can we find on that one. But they're a very valuable committee. We also have a second, and so we have to make sure if there's anybody we have to appoint or reappoint, if vacancies to fill or reappointments to make.
Yes.
Does this committee choose the chairman of that still? At one time we did. Or do they
choose?
At
one time we did, but it was a process where we allowed the committee
so we let them choose their own chair
to nominate and you confirm.
Say, and we let PCAC, the Planning Coordinating Advisory Committee, is a committee made up of representatives from each of the counties, cities, and importantly, towns, so that every local government has an opportunity to provide input and to some degree, a level of peer review. It's generally made up of elected officials. I think it now has to. Right?
It's a
peer review committee essentially created, but also gives a explicit voice in our inputs to the towns, in addition to there being a town representative on the authority. And the RJAC was the other one we had. Well, the JAC's the one we used to have to do, but I can cross that one. Okay, thank you. Just want to make sure we have that. The other item I want to talk about. I don't want to spend a tremendous amount of time on it, but I just want to share it because there's been some discussion at our meeting last month. At my recommendation, the authority directed the executive director to send a letter to the secretary addressing some questions that we had associated with some downstream effects of the I-66 project, and. We've had some discussion with. We haven't gotten a formal written response to that yet, but we've had some discussion with them. The secretary talked about our letter a little bit at the recent at the CTB meeting, I guess, on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I think there's still some uncertain. We're not fully communicating with each other properly. Is that a fair way to say it?
I think that's right.
Okay. We have a little more communication work to do. I don't want to spend. I have talked a lot about this over the last month and over the last 3 days. I'm not going to do that here, but I want to just put some thoughts out, elaborate on some of the things, discussions we've had, and give an opportunity for some folks to provide input on this. One of the questions we asked, we knew the answer to, frankly, which was, could the $500 million in concession funds that are coming to, along with this project, be used to buy down the cost of the tolls? And the answer, that one we have gotten an answer to. The answer is no, and there's reasons why, and we can share those later. But we agreed even then we knew the answer. We just knew it was a question that the public was asking and wanted to sort of get a formalized answer. And I think we're anticipating, and correct me if I'm wrong, at the CTB's Northern Virginia meeting next week, I think there'll be some more discussion about the project.
I think that's fair to say, Marty. And as the person who spent the last 2 days talking about this too, I would just say that as I listen to you and as I listen to the secretary and some of the other folks that I'm working with, this issue of trying to frame this up so we're all singing the same song using the same language is really important. We're just not there yet.
Yeah. So let me just put out some of the pieces, some of the things I've said about this, and that we're going to make that, again, I don't think we're quite communicating right now. But again, just give opportunities, because if there's someone here who disagrees with this or doesn't share this concern, I think that the concern we had was this, is that when the, I guess it was the FY17 six-year plan was being considered, the authority was asked by the administration to request the I-66 project as one of the projects to be evaluated under the process that we now call Smart Scale, although at the time it was still being called HP2. And so we asked for that $300 million in state funds from the high priority funds, what we kind of call the six-year plan funds for I-66. And as a region, we sort of collectively didn't ask for any other mega projects because it was understood that this was the one that was going to get the most attention, and any other project would not be able to compete well, and was not, there was some hope that any others would not compete well. I will note parenthetically, and the process that was used there was different, that funding was approved, that $300 million, as we all know, and we'll come back to that point. Parenthetically, but relevant to the questions that I have are, $150 million through a different channel was allocated to the Hampton Roads region for high speed, for the light rail project in Virginia Beach. Two turns of events took place. One is, in the Virginia Beach piece, the voters actually voted in a referendum to not move forward with that project. So that's $150 million from Virginia Beach that flows back to the Commonwealth and becomes available for the next year of future Smart Scale funding, if I believe.
Yes, but it's split between the high priority pot and the construction district grant pot, because that's how the money came
out.
That's how it came in.
The money flows back to the pots it came from. Right. That's helpful.
That's very important.
Their money came from two pots. Half of it goes back to the high priority pot. Half goes to their regional pot.
It gets spread among the regions. So Northern Virginia's piece of that is $15.5 million.
Okay.
Oh, that's going to go back into our our construction district grant program.
Okay. The $300 million that was allocated for I-66 was all high priority funds.
All high priority.
Which is, those are the funds that we kind of think of as the big pot that gets, kind of shaken up.
It's not real big.
It's not.
I mean, I think that's the other.
Well,
part.
This is the tricky problem.
It's
only a couple billion dollars, so it's not that much money.
Well, it was $1.7 billion last year for both pots.
Both pots.
And then it got split half into 27% into high priority, 72% or whatever the numbers are, something like that, into district grant program, Marty. So the two pots are not the same size.
Okay. Talking about them as it's one pot with two segments of the pot.
Right, but they're not 50-50.
No, actually, they're not 50-50. Here's the $1.7 billion can be talked about. Let me break down the issue that I've had some conversations about. The two pots, which are not the same size, total $1.7 billion.
Last year,
totaled, past tense, $1.7 billion. $523 million of that $1.7 billion was allocated to projects in Northern Virginia. $300 million in high priority funds for I-66, $183 million in district grant funds, which is money that was, don't want to oversimplify it, but that is money that is explicitly has Northern Virginia's name on the grant, as opposed to the $300 million that could have gone someplace else. And then $40 million of commingled district grant and high priority funds. That $523 million across the high priority and district grant funds totaled 31% of the $1.7 billion. When you don't need the $300 million of high priority funds for 66, those funds flow into the next six-year plan, into the high-priority funds. They go back into the pot they came from, which I haven't heard anybody, especially myself, saying it should go any place other than that. It's absolutely where it should go, because we have to go through another round of evaluation. But what that does is that $300 million is no longer part of the FY17 plan. Those two pots together now equal $1.4 billion, and the piece of that will be spent in Northern Virginia of that $1.4 billion is $223 million. Now, in interest of intellectual honesty, when you also and I actually did the math wrong, because I assumed, I in my math, treated the $150 million for Virginia Beach as all high priority funds, and it's not. But there's another $75 million of high priority funds that comes back from Virginia Beach that flows back to high priority funds next year. The point is, after you if you redo the math on the high priority funds and district grant funds together, Northern Virginia is getting something on the order of 17% of the total, which is a much smaller, the pie is smaller, but our has gotten smaller by a certain amount. Our wedge of that pie has also gotten smaller by a larger factor. There is nothing, I don't think, and I want to be clear, there's nothing about that fact that can be changed now. And I don't, and if anyone wants to disagree, please do. I was not suggesting, and I don't think we were suggesting in the letter, that that should change. And to be clear, and I think this is something that I think everyone understands, but it's important to understand, there is nothing in state law that sets, or even in standard practices and policies, that says about 30% should go here, and about 10% should go here, and about 5% go here. The Smart Scale project determines which project, in theory, if it's doing its job, like if the 599 project does its job, someone can tell us later whether it did, but we want to think it does. If the process does its job, it picks the best projects, those that serve the Commonwealth the best. I think the concern that I have and that I hear from constituents a lot is there are a lot of needs in Northern Virginia. There's lots of needs every place, but there's a really large piece of needs in Northern Virginia, as evidenced by the fact that we have nearly 700 projects submitted for our transaction plan. And a lot of dollars flow out of Northern Virginia relative to other districts of the state into these pots. We have never gotten back dollar in, dollar out, and we never will. And I think that the collective logic that we the authority, specifically, as a region, yes, but as a body here, had to buy into with the passage of HB 2313 is, we get to tax ourselves, so we have more money to do stuff that stays in the region, but we've got to accept the fact that we're never going to get dollar in, dollar out on the district grant and high priority funds. And I think that, I don't see the authority changing that position. What I do think is, irrespective, frankly, of whether this authority feels that way, although I think some might, I think the general public would be troubled to hear that Northern Virginia, with all the money we put in and all the problems we have, is only getting about 17% of a pot. There's nothing we can do to change that. The concern I have is, I don't know that some other really important project, and everyone at this table can think of that they're concerned about, could have been funded had we asked for it. But we didn't ask for it because we thought that $300 million was going to be needed for the 66 project. Now that $300 million goes back into a statewide pool of funds, and we will get some portion of that statewide pool of funds to include some portion of the extra $300 million, actually extra $375 million that is put back in it between 66 and the light rail project in Virginia Beach. And I don't want any, and I want to be clear, I don't think that, I don't want this authority suggesting, or me to suggest, that we are not going to get whatever is reasonable out of the next round of Smart Scale. The challenge is that would, and recognizing that we have 2 million people in this region and they don't all read our meeting minutes, a few of them do, but not all. A lot of people in our region would not have their concerns soothed by knowing you got 17% last year, but you're going to get whatever the next number is the next year. And what I want, and I think and what makes the situation unusual is we have this new process called Smart Scale that came to light at almost the exact same time as we had, for the first time in state history, a gigantic PPTA that did not require any public funds. It's all private funds going into this. In fact, there are some private funds coming to the state, not to the region, but to the state to be expended in the region out of that. The challenge that is something I think about, but is also something that I think a lot of citizens would be thinking about if they understood it. And it's really complicated stuff is, I've been asked by some people, well, what are you complaining about? There's a $2 billion highway that's going to be built and you don't have to pay for it. And that's true. The NVTA doesn't have to pay for it, and the CTB doesn't have to pay for it. But disproportionately speaking, largely disproportionately speaking, the people who will pay for it are the Northern Virginia residents who drive on it for the next 50 years.
No question.
And every one of us has the choice to stay in the general purpose lanes. But if we all stay in the general purpose lanes, it'll never get paid for. So someone somewhere, presumably the bidder, is presuming that Northern Virginians are going to drive on it. And so what I don't want the message to be, I think that the I-66 project is a huge victory for this region. I think it is an extraordinarily good deal. There's plenty of people will find ways to criticize it. I won't be one of them to criticize the deal that was made. I was in the governor's press release on the deal. I think it's a great deal. I was asked to give a quotation about 5 minutes before the deal was announced because I didn't know. But I just fully support the deal. But I don't think the fact that that deal is good mitigates the question that for a generation or more, Northern Virginians were saying, we just don't feel like whether we mathematically do or not based on someone's formula, Northern Virginia feel often that they're not getting what they think they should expect. And if you look at the numbers from the high priority and district grant funds from FY17, those numbers would seem to be consistent with that longstanding feeling. And at a time when we just passed this landmark legislation that says Northern Virginia gets their own money, but very importantly, should not have the fact that we have our own money work against us at the statewide level, that's something that we need to be talking about, because we've changed the laws to create HB 2313, HB 2, more PPTAs. We've changed the landscape, but the intersection of the various changes to the landscape has created outcomes which, on balance, might be good, but are generating concerns and questions among the people we represent. And I recognize that the administration represents all the same people we do, plus another 6 million. And today, it's not our job to worry about the other 6 million. It's our job to worry about the 2 million we represent. And this is the discussion I want to have. Not because we can change anything that happened last year, but the next time there's a giant PPTA, I mean, put it this way, if there's a giant PPTA to build another tunnel under the Chesapeake or under the Hampton Roads area to give them their third crossing, and it's entirely paid for by PPTAs, someone's going to need to say, hey, remember what happened to the high priority funds the last time. Let's make sure we're talking about this. When the Congress approves, as was promised by both presidential campaigns, hundreds of billions of dollars of new infrastructure funds, one of those campaigns won, but they both promised hundreds of billion dollars of infrastructure funds. When some of those come to Virginia, it's going to cause people to question, how does that change these formulas? Because the public, there's a lot of different ways the money flows, but what the public looks at is the high priority funds and the district grant funds. Those are the pieces that people know about. And I think we have to use this project to ask the questions of how do we talk about these things better the next time? And so we had some conversations with them. We've clarified some things for them. Hopefully we're going to get a letter that answers this. But I want to let folks know the discussion. And if there's any sort of input on this, I'd like to have it. So Mr. Minchin.
First of all, Mr. Chairman, I commend you not only for your thoroughness, but for your diplomacy. If I were to take what you said, which is absolutely, you know, capturable in our minutes, Northern Virginia is being shortchanged. That's the headline I get from this. If you look at our percentage of the population, you look at the letter and the spirit of some of the enactment clauses of House Bill 2313, you pick up on that. But what worries me is that because the Commonwealth's investment in Northern Virginia, that was going to be their portion of the I-66, that's the Beltway project, is now free, which is an adjective I would not use, our people are still paying for it. And I think that we're shortchanging. I'm not saying there's a malum in say that existed by a desire to shortchange Northern Virginia. It just happened. But I think the problem is that the bottom line is we are getting 17% when we are the economic engine of the Commonwealth and we have a large share of the population. And the tolls, as you know, under the algorithm that's going to be used there for a toll, the tolls are going to be set such that you maintain a 55 mile per hour speed. There's no upper limit on those tolls. You can imagine that algorithm can go as high as an Uber charge on Halloween night trying to get home. There's no upper limit on what that may be.
I paid a $22 toll.
It is the theory of congestion pricing.
It is a theory. You can call it Lexus lanes. You can call it trucking encouragement lanes, whatever. Again, I'm not casting aspersions. The chairman stated it diplomatically and thoroughly, but the net result, the net precipitation of this is that our region's getting shortchanged, period.
And where? And you called me diplomatic. I don't want to, for me, and I'm not disagreeing with you, you said what you said. I don't even want to say we're being shortchanged. I want to say that there are people in the community who feel we're being shortchanged, and we need to figure out how we manage those sentiments, and more importantly, how we manage our future expectations, to be sure. I'm quibbling with you over language there, not over. So, Mr. Black, sir.
You know, I'd like to add to that. There's sort of this notion that somehow the taxpayers are not paying as long as it's paid via toll. The peak payment for a toll, if somebody goes at the peak hours, according to the estimates, runs about $23,000 a year, according to one estimate. This is not free. This is a lot of money. And whether we pay it through a sales tax or a gasoline tax or a toll, it's a tax. It's a tax on the roads. And I think we need to recognize that. Now, one of the things, and this is just my personal feeling, one of the few things that government should absolutely do and should have a monopoly over is roads. Because there's only so many ways that you can build a road. You can't just have 100 different companies try and compete. You've got to build in certain places. And it troubles me, looking at Northern Virginia in the way that we do the public-private, I'm not a keen fan of public-private to start with. To me, we ought to just pay for the roads. And I worry, I look, for example, at 95, where we have a phenomenal right-of-way. We could easily have 10, 12 lanes going if we used all of that, but instead we squeeze people onto the sides, and in the middle, we've got this gargantuan piece of right-of-way, and you sit there bumper to bumper and you watch as half a dozen limousine driven cars go whizzing by. And I'm not sure that is the way that we ought to do it. To me, I don't care whether somebody is making minimum wage or whether they're making $20 million a year. Those roads belong to the people. People ought to pay the same amount, and it ought to be spread across the Commonwealth what we pay. So that's just a statement of philosophy. I don't disagree with anything that you've said, Mr. Chairman. I think it's all very accurate. I just want to let my personal philosophy be known, and it is that we really should get we should move back to where we're building roads for the public, and we're not building special roads for those people. Because I've got people in my neighborhood who, they have helicopters, and they pay a premium to get to work by flying those helicopters. We're doing the same thing with the Lexus lanes. People who have got the money, who can pay it, they pay it. The rest of us sit there bumper to bumper. And it's just, to me, it's a philosophical thing. And I would just ask that perhaps the minutes note my grumbling a little bit, if possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Noe, might I speak?
Please.
Because I've been living this pretty intimately for the last week or two here. So first of all, let me say that I think we need to recognize that this deal, and most likely the deal on 395, are about giving the public choices. You know, there is the choice to get in the general purpose lane. There is the choice to pay something in the toll lane. Both of these deals have significant transit support dollars that will be coming to our region that we would not have gotten any other way. $20 million a year that DRPT baked into the outside the 66 plan. There's money on inside the Beltway on 66, and there's $15 million or so, at least that was the last number I heard, coming on 95, all to put more people movers in play and give people real options about how they come and go to work. This isn't like when I go to the Eastern Shore and the only way I get there is by paying the toll on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. I mean, I don't have a choice unless I guess I got in a boat, maybe.
You go to Philadelphia.
I could go to Philadelphia and come back down. But I mean, the general driving public doesn't have a choice in that moment. And so I think we have to recognize that. And I've been saying, I said this for years as an Arlington County board member, the only way that this whole region works is if we layer options. And then we let people make the choice that's smartest for them in their life in that moment. One of the statistics we heard at CTB was when you look at who's using the 495 hot lanes and the ones on 95, the average user is using it 5 times a month or fewer. So most people are not taking it every day, but lots of people are using it when it makes sense for them to take it for whatever their personal life is. And the rest of the time, they're in the general purpose lane. So I think we have to be really careful about what we're saying about who's going to use this and how much any one person's going to pay. And the day laborer is not going to pay $23,000. But, you know, the time their kid is sick and they had to drop them a different place and they had to get to work, they might, in fact, pay the toll because keeping their job is that important to them so they're not late. So, whatever. I just think, and I think the other thing, and this was my mantra the last 2 days at CTB, was what you said, Marty, is true. You know, all this stuff, it's like 2.5 years old at best. Right? We've been through Smart Scale once. We've done 2-3 rounds of our funding. We got a lot of stuff in the pipeline. We're working really hard collectively to try to figure out what the smartest investments are in a world where, you know, Senator Black, with all due respect, if you gave us $2.1 billion of tax revenue to build I-66, it might have been done a while ago. So, you know, it's all well and good to say we should pay for it. I don't know where the money's coming from. And I, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is we all need to recognize that what we're crafting is a new system that acknowledges we don't have enough money to do everything on everybody's list, and that together, working with the state, with this authority, with HR TAC, we're going to get to a place where this works. And you're exactly right to say this was a really unexpected outcome, and we didn't know quite how to deal with this. There's some things in the law that says you got to put stuff back where it came from. And there are other ways in which we can work together. And so I really hope, I mean, I think it was revelatory, the conversation we had at CTB. And I think we just are going to have to keep working this a little bit. I'm very confident that we're going to find a way that will bring these things into a mesh that we can all understand. But it's like anytime you change something, there are always things you didn't plan for. I mean, you know, it's just life. We just have to all keep working on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have many opportunities to raise an issue, but I just wanted to
provide my interpretation of what I think I heard you say. And if it's correct, I want to second it, because I think what I heard was a situation occurred that we didn't anticipate, and it resulted in money going back into the coffers, the pot, in whatever way it's distributed to, that would be available throughout the rest of the state. And I think the point that I heard that really resonated with me was, oh, that's unfortunate, and I do think our constituents that we all represent would be concerned if they saw we were getting 17% of the pie every year, but we're the major donor to the baking of that pie. My issue is the next time another community in this state, for those that pay attention to other parts of this state, have a similar situation, and they could arguably make the same case that they were shortchanged, that as a matter of fairness, they're treated the same way we were, and that the money goes back into the pot, and they can't go and make a case, hey, well, we were shortchanged here, so give us a little bit extra. We're not doing that, and our region may not like it, but it ought to be applied fairly to everybody in the future as it was to us.
I think you're right, although if there's a different, if there's some better way, I don't know what the answer is going to be.
Right.
And it goes back, I think part of it, the other piece I would add is, there is no question that, had we known a year and a half ago that the $300 million subsidy would not be needed, which there was no way of knowing at the time, but had we known that at the time, the whole six-year plan would have rolled out incredibly differently in ways that we will now never know what they were. The next time that something like that could happen, this is one of the questions that will have to be asked. No one knew a year and a half ago we needed to ask this question. Now that we know it, I think we need to be having a conversation about, let's talk about what might have happened instead, so that when the next time we say, hey, there's this other big thing that does need a public subsidy.
And the rules aren't being changed in midstream for us, and they shouldn't be changed midstream for anybody else.
That might be the case.
And I think this will elucidate what the CTB's policy should be. I mean, I think we're actually having the right kind of policy conversation about this is the impact. Are we okay with the impact? If so, that becomes our modus operandi.
Yes. Thank you for the discussion. I think this is helpful, and Ms. Hines, you're going to be part of the conversation, because if not, I'm going to be standing in front of you at a CTB meeting saying it to you again. So, is this helpful to you?
It's been very interesting to listen to the two perspectives, and I will say the other thing is that I think we're singing a lot of the same song. We're using slightly different language, and we got to find a way to get to the same language so that we're all clear on what we're doing. And that was very clear in my conversations with the secretary. So we'll get there. I'm confident.
I made a statement sort of offhandedly earlier that I just want to clarify, since we do record the meetings. I said I paid a $22 toll the other day, and I didn't pay a $22 toll in my car. Because if I see that the tolls are $22, what I do is I go get dinner and wait for traffic to slow down. But to me, actually, that's one of the values of the toll lanes. Because I have the option of using the general purpose lanes and going really slow because it's a $23 toll, or I have the purpose of paying $22 and going fast, or I have the option of saying, I'm going through the neighborhoods, or I'm going to do something else instead. It's all about options. But the $23 toll, I say this all the time, because I talk about 95, 495. I'm still trying to figure out how to do the math, because the invoice that I get from EasyPass doesn't have as much detail as I wish it did.
That's a fact.
My appliance company pays as much in tolls on 95 and 495 as it would cost me to add another truck and two workers, a truck, a bunch of tools, all the hookup parts, and two men, could be women, but they always end up being men, in that truck, has been women sometimes, in that truck to add an extra delivery crew to the road. Now, I can't prove mathematically that the amount of time that my delivery crews save on the express lanes equals the same number of man hours that would be worth that. But obviously, I'm assuming it at least does, if not better, or I wouldn't be directing them to use it. I know I paid the $20 tolls because I had a crew chief call me and said, boss, I've never seen them this high. Are you sure you want me to use them? And I said, yes, you make $22 an hour. Will it save you an hour to get home? Yes. I said, then we haven't even calculated your coworker into the equation. I am hoping that the 395 and 66 toll lanes will allow me to save yet another full delivery crew worth of manpower over every single year. I think they're a great program, but when it comes into this room, our part of our role is to advocate for our region, and we have to understand how all the pieces fit together.
Mr. Chairman, I will say that The next time Chairman Bulova asks me for $300 million, I'm going to have to ask some hard questions.
I just want to object to Arlington picking on
Technically speaking, she only asked for about $200 million. Principally, I'm asked for $80 million, and the city of Fairfax asked for $200 million. To be fair, there's a town in there, too. Is it Vienna? Vienna gets a couple $1 million out of the deal, I think, as well. But let the record show that that Mr. Parrish made Mr. Fassett's statement, please. I thank you all very much for that. Is there any other business, any other questions or comments, please?
I just need to apologize. My scheduler had this on my schedule for 7 o'clock. It's the third mistake this week.
Sounds like someone's not getting
butt lunch. you need to check the minutes.
We made you my chairman.
Congratulations.
We're not having a close session.
You know what
the business coming for the body, we are now adjourned. Thank you very much.
All right.
Mr.